Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. So let's find out what's going on in Washington on the big day of the signing. And still, New York Times, I hate you. This idiocy of that Trump's keeping families together. I got Justin Duckham, Talk Media News. Justin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, great to be here. You know, the families are going to be kept together, but, you know, in a sense that probably should stop a lot of people from celebrating too early. Basically, this means that they are going to be kept together in detention indefinitely if the administration gets their way from the language that was laid out in the executive order. So what this says is basically that, you know, the family separation policy is going to be ending, but the zero tolerance policy for illegal immigration is not. And that is something that should raise some major red flags, since that is paving the way for a major legal battle and one that could put everybody back at square one in just a matter of time.
You know who's happy about that, though? Who's thrilled to death?
Sessions. Everyone?
No, the for-profit prison industry, the people who are going to be making tons of money off of warehousing all of these people.
Yeah, I mean, the executive order discusses, you know, a little bit of how exactly they should move forward with that. There's some directions that are put forward there for the Secretary of Defense, I believe, to, you know, look at sites and whatnot. But as it stands right now, you know, this is a pretty you know, shocking order. It's got a lot of, you know, people early on saying that this was going to be an end to it. And what we know now is that, you know, this isn't really much of a change. The crux of what made the policy what it was, the, you know, attempt to prosecute everybody who comes into the country illegally and, you know, avoid, you know, generally the asylum or deportation hearings in, you know, a different manner, is just kind of being put at a wayside. So this is, you know, a pretty interesting day and one that's, you know, showing that there certainly does need to be a lot more done on this before, you know, any sort of victory can be claimed. And it's sort of a warning signal right now, I guess.
Yeah, but what happened to he can't do anything? You know, he's powerless. It's the Democrats. It's the Democrats, Justin. He's powerless. His hands are tied. Executive orders won't do anything.
Well, you know, what they're now doing is shifting the responsibility to Congress again. You know, what happened was in 1997, there was a court order.
The Flores settlement.
And that said basically that, you know, children can't be kept beyond 20 days. That is what they initially said was the reason for why they couldn't act unilaterally. You know, the real reason was because they were sticking to zero tolerance immigration policy. And so now, basically, they're saying that Congress still needs to act in order to move beyond that court settlement, in order to say that they can keep children from beyond, you know, the 20-day maximum that was previously laid out in that court order. And, you know, again, it's just sort of a sly way of shifting responsibility away from them and not, you know, moving away from their initial policy of, you know, zero tolerance, which, you know, Sessions laid out in terms of a language of, you know, setting out additional deterrence and whatnot. And that should be a cause for concern and, you know, certainly will, you know, be leading to a lot more fights down the road. There's a big legal battle up ahead of this. There's a big congressional battle. And we're going to probably, you know, if we can judge from what we've seen from the administration so far, see them just sort of, you know, wipe their hands of this and move on and, you know, pretty much say that they did what they had to do and that, you know, the ball is in Congress's courts where it's, you know, not going to be going anywhere anytime soon, judging from what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. But again, my one of my big beefs is with our media saying, you know, he's ended it. You know, it's okay now. I mean, it's the appearance of that when we know there's no way they're backing down from this. He got a good news day out of something that he created, and I'm tired of this already. I'm tired of it, Justin. Tired.
Yeah, I mean, they're. Should have been sort of a caveat that came with a lot of this, noting that the executive order was not released at the time of its signing. And that should always be something that people should be very wary of. You know, we've seen the president make grandiose claims before publicly, have the media roll with that and sort of give some coverage to that. And then when they're given the actual text of it, you know, sort of realize that it's much different than what was initially discussed. You know, that's something that we saw recently in North Korea, where the president, you know, took to the stage and held this grandiose press conference where he said that they had agreed to, you know, verification measures and that they had a deal and it looked like this and this and this and everything was going to be rosy and peachy forever. And then when the actual, you know, not agreement, just the joint statement on there came out, and there was evidence that there was nothing binding in that, there was no, you know, language that had to do with verification or anything that the president had previously heavily suggested, it sort of showed that, you know, that was an instance in which, you know, in this administration, image really trumps everything.
No, there was no there. And look, I said that from the beginning. I mean, I don't trust him at all. He kind of reminds me of he would be fun to play that game with. You whisper in one ear, and what comes out of his mouth to the next person is completely different. And you know how you go around a room and you start with something, and it's completely different by the time, you know, you could play that with three people. You would tell him, and by the time he told the next person, it'd be completely different.
I mean, it really is shocking. And just, you know, on top of what happened today, as soon as he signed the executive order, as soon as he was up in the air on Air Force One en route to Duluth, Minnesota, ended up tweeting that while he was speaking to the House Republican Conference last night, he was met with loud laughs and cheers when he basically ripped into Mark Sanford. You know, say what you will about Mark Sanford, but he is somebody who is, you know, relatively liked among Republicans or, you know, by Republicans on the Hill. And that was not how the meeting went from everybody who was in the room who had been willing to talk about it. But nevertheless, the president, you know, pretty much seemed in almost sort of a playful, bratty fashion determined to lie just to, I guess, basically test the limits and toy with, you know, Congress. All of this going on while he's courting them for support when it comes to these immigration bills. So just a level of just, you know, cruelty in that regard mixed with, you know, disrespect mixed with everything, you know, Trumpy we've seen since he's taken office all in one day. It's just it's just sort of a shocking turn of events.
It's crazy. You know, I was following the Twitter.
If this hasn't been like, you know, going on for the past 500 days, but still, some days it just tests the imagination of what's still acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, I know, you know, Joe Biden said that we had hit rock bottom when the administration went after McCain. We're nowhere near there yet. But, you know, here's the thing. I was watching some of the clips and following Twitter, and everyone was talking about this Christian Nielsen, or I think her name is, the Homeland Security woman. And, you know, there were people saying, oh, you know, it looked like she was crying and, you know, all of this stuff. And I'm going, you know, I have no sympathy for her whatsoever because, I'm sorry, you had to know what you were doing was wrong. And you had to know that while you were doing it, he was going to backdoor you. And he did. So I have no sympathy for her whatsoever, and I have no sympathy for her being thrown out of a Mexican restaurant either. I mean, just why would you go to a Mexican restaurant after doing what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean the gall of doing something like that certainly you know adds a fresh layer of just weirdness to this you know entire ordeal. But this was something that really really got a lot of attention today. You know, this video of her being, you know, yelled at by activists for 10 solid minutes, probably beyond that. I think the video cuts out then, you know, and just the fact of how quickly that spread really just highlights how visceral of an issue this is and how the administration is just sort of turning a blind eye to the fact that, you know, people are angry. They are rightfully angry. yet we still see the president continuing to insist on Twitter that this is just about politics, that Democrats are, you know, doing this so that they can open the borders and let illegal immigrants, in his words, infest the United States, rather than there just being sort of a human reaction to, you know, children suffering, which is, again, just one of those things where it's troubling to say the least, but shouldn't really be surprising considering everything we've seen in the past couple of hundred days.
Yeah, but here's the thing, you liberal media types, you're using the children to make those good Republicans feel bad. And the woman in the CNN story, and I got to be honest, I don't know how cruel you could be to come out and say that. The liberal media is just using those children to make us feel bad, and I don't want to feel bad.
I mean, we also just got off of an election where a good number of the president's reporters were, you know, convinced that there was an underground sex traffic ring and a pizza restaurant in Northwest D.C. and ended up, you know, having one of their members go up to there with a, you know, an assault rifle or something like that to try to, you know, free these non-existent children from a non-existent basement in this restaurant. So, you know, the and then, of course, on top of that, the years and years and years of evangelical politics that, you know, touches on abortion and touches on reproductive health, all of this just kind of tossed along the wayside. You know, you, I guess, would imagine in the past couple of years, presume that the alt-right and the evangelical right could at least unite when it comes to kids. And this, you know, scenario just shows that it's not the case and that there's a lot of hypocrisy out there.
No, it's just horrible. It's sad. If this is who we are, I'm sorry. It's not who I am. Let's move on. I understand Michael Cohen, and I can't believe he still was, as of today, still the deputy finance chair of the RNC, but evidently Trump's bagman, Michael Cohen, stepped down from that position. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, so Michael Cohen has been in a position for a while. You know, Steve Wynn, I believe, is still also in a role with the, you know, RNC, despite the fact that there was a lot of outrage coming from the Republican Party over, you know, Democrats needing to denounce and return donations from Harvey Weinstein immediately. That sort of, you know, outcry was not reflected when, you know, they had bad actors in their own midst. But I digress. Anyways, so Michael Cohen did step down today. He left his position as deputy finance chair, and in his statement actually took a parting swipe at the Trump administration, saying that he is somebody who is descended from Polish immigrants who survived the Holocaust, and that while he supports, you know, border security, he is uncomfortable with this level of, you know, children being ripped away from their families and detained and whatnot. So, you know, Cohen sort of giving a weird, odd, out-of-place moral message from somebody who has, you know, been sort of an amoral creature so far in these conversations. I guess perhaps maybe looking for a little bit of public sympathy, or maybe more likely trying to give a sign that he is willing to stand up against Trump after years of, you know, sort of being his lackey at a time where the power is in his corner and that he, you know, could very well present some damage to the president. So, you know, I guess there are a couple of ways to read it, but either way, it's a pretty bizarre statement to add on to that, you know, resignation letter.
Yeah, I read into it as a, hey, I might be flipping. You better pardon me soon. You better do something, or I'm singing like a jaybird.
I mean, it's pretty clear at this point that Cohen and his allies are trying to communicate that message through the media. There's been a lot of rumblings breaking through about him being frustrated that Trump has not offered to pay for his legal bills, saying that it's bankrupting him. You know, considering everything that Michael Cohen knows, that should probably be a message that would make sense to the White House, would make sense to the outside counsel. But, you know, lo and behold, it does not seem to be reflected at this point right now, even though we have seen, you know, the Trump campaign at least willing to pay legal fees when it comes to Don Trump Jr. And, you know, the White House largely being creative in, or sorry, at least the outside counsel, at least largely being creative in terms of how they find the funding to cover legal bills previously. So, you know, it looks like Cohen is in a position to cause damage. And at this point, it doesn't look like much is going to stop him.
It's going to be fun and interesting to see how this plays itself out. But Justin, appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. Have a good one.
Good stuff. Justin Duckham, Talk Media News. Quick break. Right back.